And that it's interesting, we gave a hypothetical. Let's say you asked somebody, you were a wealthy person, and you had somebody working for you, charged to find a good recipient for your tzedakah. You wanted to give tzedakah to someone, and you asked somebody to find somebody who could receive, and it turns out that after you give a large check to this person, that person turns out to be an actor, and isn't really poor, and was just pretending to need the money. What would you think of that? And we assumed that you'd be pretty upset about that, and that you'd want to fire this guy, and that this would not be an acceptable way of fulfilling your mission. Yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to do that, because we find that Avram Avinu, in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, Avram is interested in involving himself in chesed, even though he's recuperating from his smila. And so God says, fine, I'll give you some chesed opportunities, I'll send you some guests. And guests show up, and Avram spends a lot of time and effort taking care of them, but they're not real guests, they're angels. So isn't that the same thing as somebody pretending to be poor and taking your money? So these pretended to be human and took his time. Time is more important than money. So why is this not just as much of a scam as somebody who pretended to be poor? So to discuss that, we essentially explain that there's two aspects of tzedakah, which is also present in chesed. Tzedakah and chesed are two halves of the same coin, literally sometimes. And tzedakah and chesed, they go together. That chesed is what we call chesed begufo. It's what you do with your time, with yourself. And tzedakah is called chesed shebimamono. But they both clearly share the same kind of direction, the same instincts, the same components to them. The Gemara does compare, the Gemara at the end of the Masechta Sukkah compares tzedakah to chesed with a favor towards chesed. It says that chesed is better for a couple reasons, because chesed you do both for the rich and for the poor, chesed you do both for the dead and for the living, and chesed you do both with your money and with yourself, while tzedakah is only about money, is only for the living, and is only for the poor. So for a couple of reasons, chesed is broader, and therefore in that sense greater than tzedakah, but clearly they are linked concepts, they have common cores to them. So in both cases, you have two components. So when it comes to chesed, so chesed has two mitzvot in the Torah that command it. On the one hand, there is the ahavta l'reicha kamocha. There is the idea that one should try to help his neighbor, help his fellow. That's one mitzvah of chesed. And on the other hand, there is the mitzvah of halachta b'dracha, that we're told we have to imitate God, which is an idea that appears in one form or another about eight times in Sefer Dvarim alone. The Torah telling us, it's known in Latin, imitatio Dei, we should imitate God. So how do you do that? We don't have the same skills as God. How do you imitate Him? So the Gemara tells us that you imitate God by following His path of chesed. It's just like He engages in acts of kindness. The Gemara in Sota mentions the Torah starts and ends with chesed. In the very beginning of the Torah, God is Malbish Arumim. He provides clothing for Adam and Chava, and at the end of the Torah, he's Kovra Mason, he does the burial for Moshe Rabbeinu, so the Torah begins and ends with Chesed, so that is the theme of God. So if you want to imitate God, engage in Chesed. So that's another mitzvah of Chesed. The Rambam, in Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam quotes both. So what's the idea of having two different mitzvahs of Chesed? So on the one hand, there is the idea that you are doing chesed for other people, you're helping them, that's the ahavta l'reicha kamocha. And on the other hand, there is the idea of creating a divine personality, of making yourself more like God, which is really something, in a sense, you do for yourself, you do for God, and that's v'lachta b'dracha. So they both command chesed, they both essentially point in the same direction, but sometimes they diverge, and that's one of the things we keep our eyes out for within the sugyas, of where do you find overlaps and where do you find points of divergence, because the assumption is that tzedakah also has that as well, that tzedakah has both elements to it. It has the helping people out component, and it also has the v'halachta b'dracha component to it. And over the course of our past few weeks, so we've basically developed the theme that Ksubas Samach Zayin, which we're focusing on, is probably more about the dinim in the dosen, what you do to develop your divine personality, and that the psukim in Re'eh are probably also more about that. And therefore we'll get into much more detail about this, but De Machzorah, which is much of our daf, seems to really be a halacha in the nosing, that idea that we developed at some length. And the psukim in general in Parshas Re'eh seem to be about that. So, for example, the big question, what about the Los Ases? Right, so we noted that the Torah in Parshas Re'eh, we spoke about this a little bit yesterday, the Torah in Parshas Re'eh says that if you see there are poor people around, so you have to open up your hand, and you should not clench your fist, you should not harden your heart. So one could have taken all of that as poetic, one could have taken all of that as saying, yeah, give, try to help out, but the Chiddush, the way the Rishonim, we saw Tosfos yesterday on Daf Nun Tes, the way they read it is that, no, this is not simply telling you give tzedakah, but this constitutes a mitzvah saseh, and two mitzvot lo saseh. So it constitutes a real obligation, which is a scary thought, because if we say that it's got lo saseh associated with it, so what does that mean? It means that anytime you're going to say no to a request for tzedakah, so you're violating not just one, but two lo saseh, so it's like you're eating treif and wearing shatnas at the same time if you say no, if somebody asks for tzedakah. So that's a big problem. We saw that there was a machlokas harishonim a little bit as to when the los aseis apply, that the Rashba in Sefer Shavuos, and Daf Chav Hei, the Rashba quoted an opinion that you're only in violation of los aseis if the ani is tovei you, while others, like the Rambam, it sounds like it's enough if you just know about the ani. But even that doesn't help us so much, because even if we just limit it to people who are tovei us, so there are certainly enough tovim out there. There are certainly enough people who are asking, and we generally can't say yes to everybody. So how exactly do we deal with this, practically speaking? How is it that we're not always in violation of these lavim just because of the necessities of practical life? So as we'll get into more details, when we talk about priorities, so we'll see that there are good reasons sometimes to say no. We'll talk about the priorities, so if you don't have, if you have higher priorities that are other than the person who's asking, or if you don't have money, we'll discuss the limitation of chomesh, so if it's going to require more of a chomesh, or if you don't trust this person, as we will discuss the issue of ramai or other issues of credibility. So you have a number of good reasons why you might say no. So if you say no for a good reason, so then that does not put you in violation of the lavin. But if your attitude is that you say no because you think that you don't believe in tzedakah, you don't believe in charity, people who are impoverished are not your problem, so then that's a violation of the Torah, and that's a violation of these lavim. But that's really more about you, right? That you should not become mean. So that supports our whole idea here that these psukim and re'eh are about your character traits, that you are supposed to be godlike and you are not supposed to be ungodlike. And this is an idea the Acharonim developed. It's really almost a favor from the Rambam, the Sefer HaMitzvos, when the Rambam says that we could have read Los Sikbots, Los Ametz as poetic ways of saying don't say no, but maybe they should be read more literally. They're not poetic. They're really saying don't allow your heart to become hardened. Don't allow your fist to become clenched. Not simply don't say no. If you say no with a good reason, if you say no and you maintain a sympathetic heart and you still believe in tzedakah, but you say no to this guy, so then maybe that doesn't necessarily put you in violation of the lavin associated with tzedakah. So that's a little bit of a introductory point. And we saw that that could explain Avraham Avinu, who seemingly was scammed by these angels. So he wasn't scammed, because what he was interested in then, in terms of chesed, is he was interested in the chesed of the halachta bedracha. If he wanted to work on his God muscle, he wanted to be more godlike. So for that, he needed to just go through the workout of chesed, even if it turns out that the recipient wasn't really needy. And therefore, he didn't feel at all scammed. Some discussion in the Forshim exactly at what point in that whole episode of Parshas Ve'eira, when did he catch on that they were not human, that they were angels. But at some point he caught on, and presumably he has no time as an Kodesh Baruch Hu, but he was fooled here, because this is what he wanted. He wanted to exercise his God training, and that he got to do, and that from the halakha bedracha perspective, so that is valuable. So far so good. Any questions, any issues? Okay, so in general, throughout our whole Zman, really, keeping aware of those angles is important. You know, the idea that tzedakah has these two components to it, the continuing theme that we saw building up, that ksubis and Re'e seem to emphasize the idea of halakha b'shracha a little bit more. Clearly, that's subject to some debate. But you find, in general, these two components in Staka sometimes competing with each other, sometimes going in the same direction, as a general framework to keep in mind throughout. And we noted also that there are some combinations of staka and chesed. We'll talk about the distinction we said 2 minutes ago about staka being about money and chesed being about yourself. So, for example, hafnasas orchid is really a combination of both because it's a chesed shebegufo. You have to expend your effort and your time and your attention on your guests. And it applies to wealthy guests also. And it's also chesed shemono, in that it costs you a lot of money, and especially if you're hosting aniyim, so then you are providing them with meals or providing them with sustenance. So it's really a hybrid of staka and chesed. And you also have the somewhat unique combination of the gavite staka. You have people who devote themselves to each staka, but not necessarily giving out of their own pocket, but giving of their time to make sure that staka is distributed, and that's a hybrid to get it both. A person is working in the field of staka, but is really engaged in chesed shebegufo. He's using his time and his self in order to help other people. Okay, so with that, so we started talking about priorities. And one of the issues in priorities is the question of de machsoro, so we'll push that aside for a second because that's such a fundamental theme, so we'll come back to that later. But we started talking, besides the de machsoro question, we started talking about how do you decide in terms of should you give your money in one lump sum or should you divide your money up into smaller gifts? And we saw that this was a discussion that Poskim had. There were some Poskim felt, like the Yaakov Emden and Mairal, that it's better to give a big gift to make a big impact. But most assume that it should be spread out. But the question is why? So the Rambam, in Perish HaMishnayis to Pirkei Avos, the Rambam says you should give out smaller gifts. And the Bach says this also. But what's interesting is they say it for different reasons. So the Rambam has his interpretation of Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Says the Mishnah says the hakol lufi rov hamasa. Essentially, everything is assessed based on the rov of the action. So, what does the word rov mean? Rov means multitude, as opposed to magnitude. Let's say instead of saying godel hamasa, that we look for the big action. No, we don't look for the big action. We look for many actions. So, in that context, the Rambam says if somebody could give staka, he could give it all in one big gift. Or he could give out a lot of smaller gifts, so we tell him give out a lot of smaller gifts, because each time he does that, that gives a greater sense of generosity to the donor. It strengthens his sense of nedivus, it strengthens his quality of giving, and therefore that's productive. While the Bach, and we discussed this a little bit more recently, I'm talking about Matanis Lev Yonin, that's where the Bach is, in Hilchos Matanis Lev Yonin. The Bach says it's quite obvious to him that one should give smaller gifts, but the question is why should he do that, says the Bach, because if you're going to give smaller gifts to a lot of people, that's going to be better, because in doing so you will have sustained many neshamos. So it sounds like he's focusing on economic theory, that the world is better off when staka is distributed somewhat evenly, where you don't give it all to one person and let everyone else starve, and therefore they both say divide it up, but it seems like the Rambam's coming more from a v'halachta v'dracha rationale, and the Bach is coming more from a v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha rationale. And that could have some nafkamina, as we mentioned, one nafkamina, if you're going to give it all to one person anyway, should you give it in smaller doses? So according to the Bach, presumably you're not going to accomplish anything by doing that. According to the Rambam, it would still make sense, assuming you're not torturing the person by doing it that way. You have to figure out exactly the mitzias. But also, it makes a difference, what if it's not your money? What if you are a gavite staka giving out from a communal fund? So then, this is one of the many areas where there's a divergence between your personal money and the money that you're going to give out from a communal fund, that if it's about your money, so then the Rambam's cheshbonus could come into play, the idea that you're going to give it out in such a way so as to enhance your own spirituality. But if you're giving out public money, so then you don't necessarily have the right to do this. You don't have the right to decide that you're going to make decisions based on your personal spiritual needs. You're going to have to do things that are somewhat more objective. Now, it can't be totally objective, and that's where discretion comes in, and we have discretion even in the sense of people giving out stuff. That's where we talk about the rabbinic discretionary funds. But the discretion, presumably, would have to be something a little bit more in the objective sense, and not one that is connected to your own personal proclivities. So that's one difference between public money and personal money, where the halacha might dictate a different path, depending on what you emphasize here. We noted that the Shulchan Aruch does say, based on the Gemara Maseches Erevin, that if somebody gives all of his staka, one gives all of his matnas kahuna to one kohen, so that's not a good thing. That causes famine in the world. That brings about the ravo. But the Marsham, and others comment that that's presumably only if you do that forever. But let's say you have stucco projects. So one month you're going to give to this cause, next month you're going to give to that cause. So then that's not going to necessarily fall subject to this limitation. And we mentioned also that Yaakov Kamenetsky noted that it's also a different consideration if you're raising money from the public funds, so then you also have a responsibility to try to get as much money to that fund as possible. So how do you do that? You have to be as transparent as possible, and therefore that requires that people get the sense that the money is being given out in an efficient way. And even if it really is fair, but it looks to people like it's all going to one recipient, or it's not going in an efficient way, so then people are not going to want to give, and that's also your problem. So that's another way in which it's going to distinguish between people giving out public money and people who are giving out their own private funds. Okay, any questions about any of that so far? Any issues? So far, so good. Okay, so then the machsaru again we'll come back to because that ties into a lot of other things. But what about other stucco priorities that we find? So first of all, there is a priority to relatives. One is obligated to give to his family first. And that highlights also this distinction because you could say you should give to your relatives on the one hand from a v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha component two, because we could say that part of the efficiency of making sure the world is taken care of should be that people take care of those closest to them. So if we could expect, for example, that everybody would be taken care of, let's say if every family, liyatsir, every family had one rich relative, and that rich relative took on the burden of all of the other members of his family, so that theoretically would be an efficient way to take care of all the world's needs. So it's theoretically not just a din in the giver, that could also be a din in practicality. The same way we say that there's a police station in every city and it's their job to take care of the crime in that city, so too, if the distribution actually was as efficient as that, then this could come from a v'yahav l'reicha kamocha component. Some also suggested, and we talked about this, that maybe it's also just practical in the sense that people who are closest family-wise maybe have a sense of what the needs are and what they aren't and how to effectively handle that. Maybe that's it. But it's also possible that this is a din in the no saying, that v'halachta v'drachta, that the tzedaka is more closely fulfilled when you take care of those closest to you. If we're talking about parents, so then there's an obligation to keep it out of the aid. And the parents, we do find, do take the highest priority as far as tzedaka is concerned. And it's somewhat counterintuitive, as some of us far notice, that most people don't think of their parents as tzedaka recipients for whatever reason. But really, if the parents actually are Aniyim, then this really is the highest priority. And in that sense, it also deviates. Normally, we would assume that we define relationships. We want to know how people are related, how closely related they are. So we look to the rules of Yerusha. And whoever inherits first is considered to be a closer relative. Here, that's not really true because the children inherit before the parents, but the parents receive tzedaka even before the children. So the idea that parents come first, so that could represent some aspect of kibud av v'aim. And relatives in general, there is a maila of mibsarcha al tisalin, that we're supposed to take care of our relatives, we're supposed to feel a greater closeness to our relatives. I didn't mention this first time around. I think that there's an asiva somewhere. Some say that the idea that brothers apostle edus, so as the Gemara points out, brothers apostle edus, not necessarily because we think that they're going to not tell the truth, have that Moshe and Aaron are possible ages also, their brothers, even though they would be expected to tell the truth. But some explain that the idea of two aging means you have to have two different opinions. And we assume that when people are related, so then there's going to be a natural tendency to agree with each other, and that simply doesn't represent two different opinions. So you can't have two brothers testifying together, because that's going to be one aid, it's not going to be two. So the point is, the halacha recognizes and encourages that there should be a bond between relatives, and therefore the staka flows from that. So relatives are the highest priority, and here's another example where you find this divergence, because the priority for relatives only applies to one who's giving his personal money. If you're giving out public money, so then adarab, you're not allowed to prefer your relatives. So here's another example where the halacha is not only different, but it's the opposite. If we're talking about private money versus private money should prefer relatives. Public money is not allowed to prefer relatives. We mentioned yesterday, the shaila that some ask, what if you are doing kfiya by tzedaka and you force someone to give tzedaka to the public fund and that person also has neglected relatives? Are you then allowed to prefer his relatives with his confiscated money? So that's a whole discussion, how exactly that factors into the whole kfiya component. But in any event, priority to relatives is a big thing. I think we spoke about it a little bit al piderach hadrush the first time around. If not, it's worth mentioning about the Medrash, about Avram burying Sarah. Did we mention this the first time around? Yeah. Right, that the Medrash says that when Avram buried Sarah in the next week's parsha after Vayera, in Parshas Chayei Sarah, so Avram buries Sarah, and Kodesh Baruch Hu declares that, oh, what a chesed, Avram, you chapped it, you understand what I'm all about. So that's clearly a little bit surprising, because here, this is the kind of chesed that anyone would do. Burying one's wife is the basic responsibility of any husband, so it's hard to see why that's something that deserves such credit, especially we're talking about Avraham Avinu, who spent his whole life in chesed, and the previous parasha was all about the great detail of the chesed that he does for the angels, the chesed he does for stone, the chesed he does for everybody, and now just because he buries his wife, all of a sudden we say, oh yeah, this is a Baal chesed, this is somebody who really chaps what God is all about. Very hard to understand. So there are a couple of explanations, but the Alter of Slobodka suggested that the point was that this is the idea that the Iker Chesed really is with those closest to us, and that doesn't always have the same romance associated with it. You don't necessarily feel like you're doing such a great thing when you take care of your own kids. You don't necessarily feel like that's such an accomplishment, like when you go to some far-flung place and you take care of people who are very far away. It's going to be a big deal, and you're going to get a plaque on your wall. So it's going to be much more dramatic and much more glorious, but the Iker Mitzvah Chesed are those closest to us, and therefore Davka, this Chesed of the one closest to Avram, is where the Mitzvah is perhaps most perfectly represented. So again, here's where you have an opposite direction, whether we're talking about private money or public money. Parenthetically, by the way, the Achav Chaim comments in the Sefer Avos Chesed that these priorities that we're talking about, so you find this in reference to tzedakah, presumably it's also true when it comes to chesed, that presumably chesed and tzedakah, as we've seen, are going on parallel tracks, and they both involve limited resources, time and money, so presumably they have a similar mechanics to them, and whatever the priorities are that we decide for tzedakah, they probably have a very similar parallel system going on when it comes to chesed. Any questions so far? Okay, so far we've had no questions today about anything, but I guess that's what Pizarro is all about. Okay, so moving on. So then the question of what about merit? So we saw in our Gemara a little bit about the various considerations that people who don't really deserve the help and the like, and about the Yosom versus the Yosoma, various priorities within our Gemara. Separate from that, which again we'll take as we go through the Gemara itself. So what about the question of, let's say, people who are a bigger tzaddikim versus less big tzaddikim? So there you find such an idea, at least theoretically, that a bigger tzaddik should come first. Practically speaking, it's not clear that we really do this nowadays. Rav Kook has a tshuva where he perhaps not so surprising, I said, but nowadays we see everybody in the same light. There are others who have long essays about this, that we don't necessarily have such a ranking nowadays in terms of somebody who is more righteous or not. But here again, Moshe Feinstein points out in the Tshuva that here it's the opposite, that if there is any priority to be given to somebody who is more righteous, so it's only the public fund that's going to pay attention to that, because private money should go to your relatives. So if everyone's going to give their private money to the biggest tzaddik, so it's only the biggest tzaddik who's going to get all the money, and all the lesser tzaddikim are going to get nothing. So that's not how it's supposed to work. Your private money should go to your own priorities based on people who are closer to you. And the idea that it should go to someone more righteous, that's something for the public fund. So it's another example of these two streams having opposite conclusions. But again, in practice nowadays, we don't find people really being distinguished based on their tzedakos. The question, however, of need and other alternatives, those are elements that we see through our Gemara, which we'll discuss on a point-by-point basis. Okay, so then we get to Aniya Ircha Kodmim. So Aniya Ircha Kodmim, according to the Yiri, is the most important principle, but everything else flows from that. He comments that on a different Gemara, Maseches Ksuvos, a Gemara later in Maseches Ksuvos, where the Gemara says that we're trying to figure out if somebody decided to give a gift to somebody named Tuvia. We don't know which Tuvia it is. There are two Tuvias. So we're trying to figure out which Tuvia it is. The Gemara goes through all the different ways in which we're trying to decide who should get priority. So the Meiri, commenting on this, the Meiri says it must be that they're both from the same town, because that's the highest priority. It seems to understand that this is really the guiding principle. And later, Svarim, when they didn't have the Meiri, because Meiri was lost for all that time, so they quote this idea from the Shuvah Shemesh Staka, the Pistei Shuvah quotes from the Shemesh Staka. But Meiri said it also, that this is the highest idea, that you give to those who are closest to you. So we saw there's a lot to figure out about what exactly that means, and where do we get that idea from. So the Sefer Hafla, wrote also the Sefer Parim Yafos on Chumash, it was a Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer quotes this in the Tshuva, this is very influential halachically, that the Pasuk in Re'eh says, Ki yeh b'cha evyon b'echev sharecha, etc., etc. So first is b'cha, that refers to your father comes first, that's the highest priority, but after that is the word evyon, and then all the words talking about in your gates, in your city, etc. So the point being that we're basically competing with different goals here. But on the one hand, you have your city, but you also have evyon. The word evyon means somebody who is needy. And we say, kol ha-toiv, toiv kodem, whoever is more needy is the one who's going to come first. So many assume that we're talking about roughly comparable needs, that if you have people who need basically the same thing, so then we start giving to the people closest first. But if the needs are very different, so then we would go after the needier people first. But we clearly have some balance with this, because people who are closest to us, practically speaking, are not the neediest people in the world, so it's clear that we are distinguishing somewhat even within that category. So it seems we have essentially a tension. On the one hand, we're factoring in need, on the other hand, we're factoring in closeness, and we're balancing the two. Most assume that when we talk about priority, we talk about kedimus and staka. So first of all, kedimus is a point that Reshetter emphasizes. Says kedimus doesn't mean that like you have two mitzvahs, so you have mikra megillah and havdalah, so you say which one do you do first. It doesn't mean kedimus in that sense. It means which one are you going to do if you can only do one, so which one is going to take priority. It's not about which check, you have to write out two checks, so should you write out this check before you write out the other check. It's about who's going to get the money and who's not going to get the money. It's a very different usage of the word kedimus. But at the same time, the poskim assume that when we talk about kedimus, we mean some percentage. We don't mean, not everyone agrees with this, but this is a widespread assumption, that we don't mean that if you make your list of the 10 priorities, 1 through 10, so you'll give all of your staka to priority number 1, and then if that person's needs are completely filled, then you move on to person number 2. And if that person's needs are totally filled, then you move on to person number 3. So probably does not mean that, because then you're never going to get to number 2 on the list. It's pretty impossible that you're ever going to get too far down the list, or even to the second item on the list. So what it means is that the majority of your money goes to your highest priority. And then what's left, the majority of what's left goes to your second priority. And then the majority of what's left goes to your third priority. So the proportions keep getting smaller and smaller, but you are diversifying in that you are helping a larger number of causes. You're not exclusively focusing on only the highest priority. There is some degree of diversification, and of course there is then some degree of discretion in terms of how exactly you're going to be allotting these. So, why is it that Aniya Ircha is prioritized? Why do we decide that such a priority exists? It seems to be a drasha from Sukkot, but what's it based on? So some understand that maybe it's something like Eimavir and Mitzvah, so we should try to do the first opportunity. We shouldn't lose time in taking care of those farther away when those there are those nearer who could therefore be handled more efficiently. But that's probably not the case, because there's machlokas, for example, the tour and the rebar barach, that if you have somebody who's from somewhere else, but right now is in your town, is in your presence, coming to ask you, so according to rebar barach, that person has priority through Aniya Ircha, but according to the tour, that's not called Aniya Ircha. So it doesn't seem like it's just about the practicality of being able to reach the person first, because if that was it about, that's what it was about, then you'd be able to reach this visiting person first also, and especially nowadays where you could give out money on the internet, so then a little more so we'd say the whole distinction could be wiped out. You could make it possible for people to get donations all the way around the world in a matter of seconds, so maybe this whole issue has no more relevance at all. So it doesn't seem like it's really just about that. It doesn't seem like it's just about efficiency. It seems like it's about other things. So what it's probably about is that the idea of chesed really means that you take care of yourself first, and then you go in a straight line to those who are closest to you. We mentioned the explanation of the great Yehuda Shiva of Shinishkap, who wrote in his introduction to the Shari Osher that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says, "Emein ani l'mili u'kashani l'atzmi mani," that if I am not for myself, who will be? But if I'm only for myself, then what am I? So that's what we normally translate it, which sounds like it's essentially a tension. Oh, on the one hand, I got to worry about myself because no one else cares about me. But on the other hand, I don't want to just be so selfish. I want to help everyone else. So I'm totally torn in two directions. So what do you do? So that's how we normally translate the Mishnah. But Rav Shimon said, no, don't translate it like that. Translate it's all one idea. That yes, the main mili, that the first priority is Aniya Ircha in the most profound sense is yourself, right? You have to take care of your own needs, because that is the first responder. You are the one who is responsible for yourself more than anyone else is, so therefore you should take care of your own personal needs. That's step one. But the godless of a person is in how broadly he can open up that umbrella. So how do you define the word ani? Yes, it's true, in ein ani li mili, ani has to be devoted to me. But what does ani mean? Ani could mean just me, the individual. It could mean me and my family. It can be me and my town. It can be me and the entire Jewish people. It can be me and the entire world. If I'm a bigger person, I can define the word in a more, in a broader way. So, says Rav Shimon, that's what the Mishnah means. Imeina nili mili, yes, I have to be for myself. But, kishani l'atzmi, that if I define the word ani as meaning just me, the individual, then my ani is not so impressive. That's not so fantastic. But if I interpret ani meaning more people, so then that's greater. So you have this umbrella, you try to open up as wide as possible. So then you're going to catch as many people as you can, starting with those closest to you. So it makes sense that the people who are Aniya Ircha are going to come first. And many understand that that means, it's also a point that Rashi emphasizes often, many others do as well, that then it wouldn't necessarily be geographical, but it means people who you are involved with. So theoretically, one could be more involved with people who are not necessarily their geographical neighbors. Some Sfarim point out, for example, if you're a Chavrusa, needs stuff helps, so maybe that one takes priority than your neighbor. You have more involvement with your chavrusa than you do with your neighbor. Or another point that Shechter often makes, if you're going to give to Torah institutions, so the institutions that your children learned in are going to take priority. So let's say you're giving to schools in Israel, so they're not geographically any closer to you than other schools in Israel, or than all the schools in between here in Israel, but you have a shaykhus to them if your kids went there, so then you have a connection to these schools, and it makes sense to prioritize those as far as your stock of gifts. We also mentioned a suggestion that we know we have the idea that the Gemara says in Bar Metzia, in Pesachim, Gemara talks about Tahina Ufrika. The Torah says that you have an obligation to provide if someone's freaking out, they need Ufrika help, that they are trying to load or unload their animal, and they need assistance, and you have a choice between two people who need your help at the same time, one who is a friend of yours, and one who apparently is a sone, whatever that means, they're an enemy. So then you should help the one you don't like first. The person who is the enemy apparently should get your first attention. Says the Gemara, Kidei Lokofis, you know, this way you will try to compete and to turn away the animosity. So what do you derive from that? Well, you could derive from that you should prioritize specifically helping out people you don't like. That's one lesson you could get from it. Or you could get a different lesson, as some Sfarim do, that chesed also helps create a more harmonious society. The people who you help out, you will like more. You could think the other way around, that they'll like you for helping them out. But it's also true the other way, that if you help people, then you end up liking them more. Many point out that's the shorish, the word ahava, you know, the Aramaic hav is to give, the people you give to, the people who you love. Later works, they call that the Benjamin Franklin effect, because Ben Franklin had some whole scheme where he got somebody on his side by convincing him to lend him something, to lend Ben Franklin something. So, however it is, the idea is that chesed creates a more harmonious society. So again, it makes sense that one of the things you'll accomplish through your tzedakah and chesed is through spreading shalom. So then it makes sense that we should have such an idea that the people who you're involved with most should be the prioritized recipients of your chesed and of your tzedakah. So we have this principle of Aniyah Yircha Kodmin, and we also have a principle of Aniyah Eretz Yisrael Kodmin. That we also find in Shulchan Aruch, that Aniyah of Eretz Yisrael are high on the priority list. Some, like the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva, and the Tari Tamima discusses, that maybe within that there should be a priority to Yerushalayim. Others deny that because they say it's not a function of Kedusha necessarily, and it's not clear if the Kedusha still applies nowadays. And if it was about Kedusha, so then it should only apply to the Old City. So many reject the idea that Yerushalayim has any special status within Eretz Yisrael. But you do find that Eretz Yisrael has a priority. And then there's some discussion, should we say that's even more than Aniyah Yircha. So many assume that no, that Aniyah Yircha takes the highest priority. Some assume it's Pashut. Happens to be Rav Schechter assumes that it's a very Pashut. It's not even up to discussion. There are some who disagree, but it seems that, practically speaking, that is the case, that we assume that Aniyah Yircha takes priority over Aniyah Eretz Yisrael, so Aniyah Eretz Yisrael comes next. And we can discuss why that is. That also seems to reflect some of the ways in which we prioritize things, that sometimes we see we prioritize things for internal stalker reasons. So this could be an extension of the Aniyah Yircha idea, that we all have a shaykhus to Eretz Yisrael, we all benefit from Eretz Yisrael, so it's a mutual path of shaykhus, so therefore it could be a form of Aniyah Yircha on the next level. Or it could be because of a totally different mitzvah, because we're also fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and that's another example. Sometimes we prioritize certain stakos, not necessarily for internal stalker reasons, but because there are other mitzvahs that are accomplished through this type of support, and we want to be involved in those mitzvahs, and therefore this is a way to do it. The Avinezer has a tshuva where he says that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not necessarily defined as living in Eretz Yisrael exclusively. It's possible to be Mekayim Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and not live in Eretz Yisrael, and it's possible to live in Eretz Yisrael and not be Mekayim Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That it means settling land of Israel, which means supporting it and building it up, so it's possible for somebody who is not living in Israel to be involved in Yishuv and doing things that create settlement in the land of Israel, and it's possible for somebody to be living there and to be acting in a way that's not beneficial and acting in a way that doesn't contribute anything, and that might not even be Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, even if one is physically living there. So then, theoretically, it could be that a priority to Eretz Yisrael is based on this idea of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which is another example of a stuck a priority, not necessarily for internal stuck reasons, but because of other mitzvot, other values that are accomplished through the tzedakah. And then there's also a machlokas, as you said, l'havdol ben Achayim ben Achayim, between Reb Chaim Volozhiner and Reb Chaim Sanzer, as to whether there's any priority to, let's say, the Yeshiva University community formed in Eretz Yisrael. So should you give to that specifically more than other people in Eretz Yisrael? Would you say that, okay, since they maintain an identity that connects to you here, so therefore that still has kedimus, even though they're just as close to you physically as other people in Eretz Yisrael? Or do we say that, no, once they're in Eretz Yisrael, so then they're on the same par as everyone else, it doesn't have any greater connection to you than others? So that was a machlokas the Mechas Elazar has a tshuva about, and that's also a part of this priority issue. Okay, so far so good. And then we also talked about the idea of aniyei akum, that the Gemara says in Maseches Gittin that we're obligated to support the aniyei akum as well and to take care of them. Afarnestin aniyei akum and aniyei Yisrael and vakum chaleihem, kovim meisehem, that we're supposed to take care of the needs of the whole world population. And it's the machlokas Rishona when the Gemara says im aniyei Yisrael. Does that mean only when you're taking care of Jews at the same time, so therefore you should also take care of both, you should distinguish? Or does it mean, no, that it's just a way of saying that just like we take care of Jews, so we take care of the broader world population also? And that seems to be how we assume, like the second view, that it's not specifically limited to only when you're taking care of aniyei Yisrael also, but it's a mandate to take care of everyone. And that's also included in your stock of priorities as far as how things are ultimately allocated. And then we talked a little bit about prioritizing within causes. So some of them we'll talk about within the context of the Gemara, such as Hachnasas Kala, so we'll push that one off. But Talmud Torah is a big one that there is, I mentioned, it was in my kid's school this morning, it's not relevant, that there is an obligation to have a Talmud Torah, there's an obligation for the community to provide for the education of the youth. And that was the second parak of Maseches Bava Basra. The Gemara says this was the takana of Ben Gamla, that he said that it used to be that everyone would teach their own kids, or they would hire people to teach their own kids, but then the children who were orphans were at a big disadvantage. So it was set up that every community should have a school, and the school should be supported by the people there. So that's a big priority that's maybe not even about Staka, but that's about the general needs to support a certain infrastructure, like we find by mikvahs, that there's an obligation to provide for the mikvah, an obligation to provide for everything that the community needs on a common level, and that may even be separate from the obligation of tzedakah. I know that also Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about the two different types, the tzedakah for the children to learn Torah, the support for the children to learn Torah, we call it tinoka shel beis rabban, and for the adults who may be come the poskim, the people who are going to teach Torah, so how exactly do you prioritize between the two? And we find priorities there. We also find priorities in terms of other institutions, Beis HaKnesses. The Shulchan Aruch says there's a high priority on Beis HaKnesses. Later we're going to talk about exactly what that means. Does that mean a nicer Beis HaKnesses, more Bate HaKnesses, or does that refer to its basic role in terms of facilitating Talmud Torah and Tefillah, and nothing more than that? So that's also a discussion in Poskim. And as we saw in a couple of contexts, that a lot of times we talk about these preferences, so we could talk about broad categories, but there's always going to be differences in practicality in terms of urgency, in terms of how different things play out, and that's also going to affect these types of considerations. And then we talked also about the concept of Makari Kahuna, that the Gemara says that there is a concept of Makari Kahuna, which many pronounce Makira Kahuna, because in the Gemara it has a yud, but Yaakov Emden explains why it should really be pronounced Makari Kahuna. So people look at you funny, get pointed at Yaakov Emden's commentary on the Gemara in Bava Basra. But the idea of Makari Kahuna is that even though you have what's called the Tovas Hana, you have the right, when you're giving out Trumas and Maisras, so you have the right to give it to whatever Kohanim and Levinim you want. But let's say you've established a connection that you continuously give to a certain Kohen, so then you have an expectation that you're going to keep doing that. So then there is a discussion, there's Yerushalmi like this, that is there a concept of Makare Aniyim? Should we say that if you have Aniyim who always receive from you, so then that's also an obligation to continue in that giving? So that's a discussion, it's a shach. So many assume that there isn't really an obligation of Makari Aniyim. But Moshe Sternbach has a tshuva about it, where he says that a bigger gift, you maintain the discretion to change your mind. A smaller gift, you may have an obligation to continue if there's an expectation that it's going to keep going unless circumstances radically change. Okay, so I think that's most of what we've said about in terms of priorities for tzedakah, separating out the bigger sugyas in our daf. Was that most of it? Anything else we should?
I don't know if this gets into priority, but men over women, etc.
Right, that's a sugya in our Gemara. So we'll, the sugyas that are actually in our Gemara will go into an order. Anything else that we said about that? Any questions? Okay, so then we'll run out of time in a few minutes. I'll mention in a few minutes, but just I guess the next topic we should talk about is our Gemara focuses largely on Day Machzoro. So the question is, what exactly is the obligation of Day Machzoro? That the Torah says that we should provide for the Ani based on what he is missing. So the Gemara tells us a couple of parameters and a couple of stories, which, without going into the details of the stories now, but we got a couple of general ideas as follows. That first of all, so we are obligated to provide what a person is lacking. So we saw that we could define what a person is lacking in probably three ways. One is there are certain basic human necessities, and if you don't have them, then that's considered to be a chisaron. So food and shelter and a spouse, these are considered to be basic chisronos. If somebody doesn't have that, whoever they are, so then we are obligated to try to help them with that. We also find that there's a higher standard, that if a person is used to a more luxurious standard, so then there is an obligation to maintain them at that standard. And that is exclusively somebody who's actually had this. So some of the Mefarshim note that sometimes in some of the stories, when the Gemara talks about this, you find the expression ben tovim, the understanding being that it's specifically ben tovim, somebody who was raised with a certain standard, gets to have that standard continued, but somebody who just wants to live on a higher standard, if they feel like that's what they need, that doesn't necessarily fall under the category of de machzoro. And we find indeed that the Gemara has a limitation that you're obligated to give him what he's missing, but not l'hashiro, that you're not obligated to make someone wealthy. So if somebody wasn't wealthy before and decides he wants to be wealthy, so then that's very nice, but that's not your obligation in the tzedakah. And we can discuss, Stifler has a question, is it even your, is it maybe a heter of tzedakah, but it's certainly not the obligation of tzedakah to give such a person. So in between, there could also be another situation of de machzoro, that if somebody is living in a place where this is what everyone around them has, so you want to figure out, so when you provide basic housing, you provide the needs for a wedding, you provide sustenance, so by what standard do you do that? So then by the standard of the people all around them, that becomes the baseline, again, independently of whether or not they had this beforehand. So basically, we'll see three different ways to define a chisaron, certain basic human needs are considered to be chisaronos if they're not there. A person's previous standard of luxury could also be considered a chisaron, and the standard of everyone around them could also be considered a chisaron if they don't have that. And then we saw many stories in the Gemara, without going into the details. There was a theme that, first of all, the Gemara seemed to be saying that specifically people who had this beforehand have such a concept of de machzor, not people who specifically want it. But we also saw that there were a couple of lines in the Gemara which seemed to be saying that there's a little bit of a tension here, that if somebody needs something, so then we have to try to provide it for them. But people are also well advised to try to adjust their needs downward, and that having a high standard of needs, in one case at least, proved fatal to someone. They were such a mafunuk, they were so sensitive, that they couldn't live without that. So we find different stories in the Gemara. Some of the stories have the donors adjusting their donations upwards, and some seem to try to encourage the recipient to try to be able to handle something less, and that seems to be the message that we're finding, that when the need is there, I think we gave a parallel, you find this in Shiduchim also, that we could say that on the one hand we encourage people to be very lofty in what they're looking for, and that they should focus on that which is important and central to the major values in life. But if somebody has a need that's different, okay, so at the end of the day, whatever the needs are is what we have to try to provide for, while at the same time we try to convey that it's worth focusing on the important things in life and hope that we can be successful in bringing that about. But in any event, the Gemara does have at least one very outlandish example where the Gemara says that Hillel would try to help somebody obtain avadim to run in front of him as he traveled, and that when he couldn't do it, he couldn't find someone else to do it, he would do it himself. So what exactly does that represent? It seems to be somewhat of an extreme of luxury. It still leaves a lot of discussion as to what exactly it imposes. The Meiri says it's specifically in order to protect somebody's downfall, financial downfall, as they travel from one city to the next. Others take this to mean to show that it's really about cover, that not only is it practical needs, but also emotional needs. People are used to a certain amount of kavod, which may not even be aniyim at all, but then that is de machzoro. And so some understand that to be the lesson of the story of Hillel and the Avadim, that you also have to consider kavod needs as part of de machzoro. And you also find that some point out, the Kutzker Rebbe, the Kedarka B'Kodesh, understood this to mean that even a Meshugas is also de machzoro. If somebody feels they need something, even if it strikes us as really crazy, strikes us as something that doesn't make any sense, so that's also included in the notion of de machzoro broadly defined. Okay, I'm trying to decide whether I should start on something more involved. Any questions about any of this? So far we've had not a single question the entire day. Okay, so maybe we should say another point or two about de machzoro. So we're covering a lot of ground. So to take note further, the Gemara also says, ultimately, to skip to the end of the passage for a second here, so the Gemara ultimately talks about whether there is a chiyuv mechira, that is there an obligation to sell your property before taking from staka. So the Gemara has a discussion about this. The Gemara has a mysterious line that kan kodem giboy, kan v'achar giboy, that one standard applies before collecting, whatever that means, and one standard applies after. So there are five different ways in the Rishonim to understand what that distinction means. But the whole passage is important to understand because it seems like a contradiction to De Machzoro. On the one hand, the Gemara says that De Machzoro, we should provide even luxuries if that's what they're used to. And on the other hand, the Gemara is here saying that if they have luxuries, then they have to sell them. So isn't that a contradiction to De Machzoro? So you could say, well, no, really that Gemara is talking about adjusting them downward, not totally depriving them of the luxuries. The Gemara says if they have gold candlesticks, they should sell them for silver. And as we've seen, that's also a part of De Machzoro. Others understand that maybe there are things that are outside of De Machzoro. Like, for example, De Machzoro should only apply to something that is personally used and not just something that people own. And it sounds like from some of the Rishonim, they're interpreting the Gemara that way, that there are things which simply are not subject to De Machzoro. No one could be such a istinus, so sensitive and so delicate that they need gold ceiling fans, whatever it is, that there are certain things that are going to be completely outside of this whole cheshbon. That's also a possibility. But what we also saw, and I guess we'll just leave this to set up for tomorrow, we'll continue from this point tomorrow, is some of the Rishonim understood the very interesting idea that De Machzoro can apply to the individual, but the public kupa, so that is something that doesn't have this kind of a standard, which is not explicit in the Rishonim, that's the way we're interpreting it. So just to be more specific, Some Rishonim, such as the Rif and the Shulchan Aruch, classes like this also, they say that the distinction of the Gemara is that if somebody is taking money from Aniyim, okay, so then we don't necessarily require them to sell their stuff before doing that. But if they're coming to take from the public kupa, so then we say that they have to sell before taking from the public kupa. So followed to its logical extension, that would seem to say that de machsoro is an obligation on the individual, but not on the rabbin, which is a point we're going to have to straighten out because it seems to contradict other sources. So God willing, we will pick up with that tomorrow and then get more into some of these specific sugyos that we had on our daf. All right, the Yashikoach, everyone. We will have a mincha.